Everyone, and welcome to the Law Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Centralia, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Wood. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on War is a Racket when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, by what way is it that the light is parted? Or if we paraphrased it, it would tell us, well, by what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated? Now, imagine asking that question 4,000 years ago. Today, of course, it's a simple question to ask and answer, and the student simply responds, well, by passing it through the prism of a spectroscope. But who could have known anything about a spectroscope 4,000 years ago in Job's day? Now, when we heat a metal red hot, or we heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. And these rays, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on a graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star, we need only to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see the composition of the star and the proportion of each of its ingredients. This division of light rays is always constant, and it doesn't vary in the least particular. So we may always rely upon these results. Spectroscopic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. So this places us in a quandary, because either Job knew this or supernatural wisdom is being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of the many lessons that I teach in the Mosaic Law School here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. If you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request. Remember the general law CD package, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been reviewing the book War is a Racket by Smedley Butler, and I said it's time for us to take a look here at the scriptures as it relates to war. My grandmother told me years ago, I was just a little kid, she said the Bible is a bloody book. Yeah, it's filled with a lot of sex, too. It talks about all of the weaknesses of its characters, like David, you know, and Bathsheba. It talks about the people's mistakes. And in the New Testament, there's a statute, there's a statement that says that all of these things have happened as examples or in samples for us to learn from. You know, history repeats itself, is the old adage, and those that refuse or fail to learn from history are then bound or doomed to repeat it. Now, General Butler has pointed out some very savvy and some very wise observations from his 32 years in the military. He wrote a little book here called War is a Racket, the name of the author, Smedley Butler. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. Probably cost you $5 or $10. I forgot exactly what the price is. It's only 60 or 70 pages. A little treatise from the other side. Prior to World War II, if you'll remember, there was about an even split in America. Half the people wanted to go to war, and half the people did not. Half the people wanted to remain neutral and stay out of the war. So last time I examined the Swiss and the Swedes, and they seem to have gotten through World War I and World War II without getting involved with either side, and that nobody hates the Swiss and nobody hates the Swedes. The Swiss and the Swedes are friends with the Germans and friends with the French and friends with the English and friends with the Americans and just kind of friends with everybody. The wars have been fought and the history has been written, and now we're on to a new program. And Butler's position in 1935 through 1940 was on the other side of the hawks or the war people. And I compared that with Iraq today, you know, in 2003, you know, we were divided, not quite 50-50. Most people were in favor of going to war, probably about 75-25. And the war hawks won out, and they said, well, we're going to go to war against Iraq, and it seemed like a heck of a good idea in 2003. Now, I was in the minority in 2003, but not because I'm a pacifist or because I'm in favor of Saddam Hussein. It's because the war was not going to be fought. It was not going to be pursued according to the biblical standards and the biblical statutes on war. I think that if everybody in America was instructed on the war statutes, and then you listen to your politicians as they propose this war, you would have said, well, wait a minute, this isn't scriptural. This war doesn't follow the scripture. Now, remember, the Bible is a bloody book. The Bible is full of wars. And the Bible is full of statutes that tell us how to conduct wars. Yeah, that's right. God has instructed us in how to conduct a war. Here's, Here's step one. Here's step two. Here's step three. And I couldn't see where we were following any of those steps going into this Iraq war. So my position was, well, if we're not going to obey God and keep his commandments concerning this war, then I think we'd probably be better off if we butted out and didn't get involved in it. Now, let me give you a couple of three statutes here from the scriptures. In Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20, quite a little story in here, it says, when you go out to battle against your enemies and you see horses and chariots and a people more than you, be not afraid of them, for the Eternal your God is with you, which brought you out of the land of Egypt, and it shall be, when you are come nigh unto the battle, that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people, and shall say unto them, Hear, O Israel, you approach this day unto battle against your enemies, and let not your hearts faint, fear not, and do not tremble, neither be you terrified because of them. For the Eternal your God is he that goes with you, to fight for you against your enemies, to save you. And the officers shall speak unto the people, saying, Well, what man is there that has built a new house, and has not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man dedicate it. And what man is it that has planted a vineyard, and has not eaten of it? Let him also go and return into his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man eat of it. And what man is there that has betrothed a wife, and has not taken her? Let him go and return into his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man take her. And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and say, What man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Well, let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. And it shall be. And when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, that they shall make captains of the armies to lead the people, and when you come nigh unto the city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. And it shall be, if it make the answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. And if it shall be that they will make no peace with you, then but will make war against you, then you shall besiege it, and when the Lord your God has delivered it into your hands, you shall smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that's in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shall you take unto yourself. And you shall eat the spoil of your enemies, which the Lord your God has given you. And thus shall you do unto all the cities, which are very far off from you, which are not of the cities of these nations, but the cities of these people, which the Lord your God does give unto you for an inheritance. And you shall save alive nothing that breathes. I'm going to underline that. You shall save alive nothing that breathes. I want you to notice here that this is not a war for profit. I mean, this isn't a no-bid Halliburton profit deal here. This isn't a Kellogg Brown and Roots. You know, let's go to Iraq over here and let's rack up some profits. This is a short, bloody, nasty campaign from which there are no survivors. And furthermore, the army is all volunteer. Now, we're following that part of it. You know, we're not conscripting these soldiers. All these soldiers over in Iraq are volunteers. So we followed that portion of the scripture. And our problem isn't that we don't follow some of the scripture. Our problem is that we don't follow all of the scripture. We follow some of it, and then some of it we don't. For instance, notice this. The first thing you do is you call out and you say, Now listen, it's time for you people to surrender. George Bush did that. He called upon Saddam Hussein and he said, We want regime change over here. You pack up and move out, and I think we can avoid this war. And Saddam Hussein said, No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. We're going to fight the mother of all wars. I think that was Saddam's term. He said, This is going to be the mother of all wars. Okay, so far so good. Notice here that the priest is to go out first. The priest here in our country is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. In those days, it was Rehnquist. Rehnquist goes out first onto the battlefield with his censor to see whether or not this war is authorized. You see, if we want God to be on our side when we go into these wars, then we have to follow all of the statutes, judgments, and commandments that concern war. Now, I mentioned to you the other day that we were real concerned about these 3,000 people that have been killed over there. We're real concerned about the battle casualties and the cost of the war and one thing and another. The war has turned out to be a curse for us because we're not following the statutes. We didn't follow the statutes leading up to the war. We weren't following the statutes when we got into the war. And so from my perspective, and I'm just Joe Sixpack over here on the sidelines. I'm not here advocating war or advocating peace. I'm just observing. I'm just neutral, watching both sides over here. These Iraqi people, you know, are nice guys. Now, number one, you'll notice here that the Iraqis didn't have anything to do with the complaint that we were complaining about, and that was 9/11. And George Bush said, well, these people have weapons of mass destruction. Well, excuse me, folks, but these weapons of mass destruction came from the United States, and they were manufactured and shipped out of Fort Detrick, Maryland. When Saddam was working with us in the 1980s against the Iranians, we supplied him with all of these weapons of mass destruction. It's a little difficult to come back after the fact and say, gee, you got these weapons of mass destruction, and we're ticked off at you. The war with Iraq was a political war over war, which has absolutely nothing to do with 9/11, as has been adequately demonstrated by the 9/11 Commission and by the admissions of the administration officials themselves. So we were attacked on 9/11, that's the way the story goes, but we weren't attacked by the Iraqis. I mentioned this to you the other day. I said, you know, we might as well have gone to war against Brazil or Bolivia. We were attacked by Al-Qaeda from Afghanistan, and so we launch a war against Bolivia? What the hell sense does that make? We're attacked by the Taliban, we're attacked by Al-Qaeda, and so we go to war against Saddam Hussein? And so Saddam's probably as bad as everybody says he is. I'm not suggesting that he's a good guy. I'm just pointing out that Saddam Hussein wasn't the cause of 9/11, as we have now been told, or now we have now learned. So for those reasons, I took a look at this and I said, hey, I don't think we're following the path that God has set down for war. But there's a little bit more to the story. But did you notice here that you go to Baghdad and you say, now look, all of you people over here in Baghdad, we want you to surrender. And they said, no, we're not gonna surrender. Then when you get to Baghdad, what do you do when you get there? Well, you conquer the city and then you kill every male in the city. Now, when we got to Baghdad, did we go in there and kill every male? Because I'm telling you, if you'd have followed that instruction right there, you go into Baghdad, you take every male in the city, and you put him to the sword, you kill them all, there wouldn't be any insurgency there. There wouldn't be anything but women and children left, would there? Now, you people can't go over there and carry out that instruction. And if you can't follow that instruction, you shouldn't be going to war. And if you can't follow that instruction, then you deserve what you get, don't you? Let me read that to you again. I didn't write this. Don't get mad at me. Now, I'm a reporter. I'm reporting to you that there are laws that govern war. You people are upset with the war in Iraq, and you ought to be. It's a bad war. It's not going well. It's costing you a lot of money, but it's your own fault. You people can't follow instructions. If you want the God of Abraham on your team, if you want the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob over here fighting your battles for you, you got to follow instructions and do what you're told. And when we did that in the past, we were victorious. When we followed instructions, we haven't done that very often. I mean, you can look back over the last 3,100 years of history, from Moses to the present day. Once in a while, we followed instructions. Most of the time, we didn't. Most of the time, we've gotten a bad result. So this result that we're getting in Iraq isn't something new. It's been going on, you know, for thousands of years. Notice he says, and it shall be, if it make the answer of peace and open unto you, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto you. So you walk in, you say, okay, you guys want peace? Here are the terms. We're taking all your oil, we're taking your nation, and we're going to run it. And if they don't want peace, well, then we put all the males to the sword, and we'll just enforce peace on you. Listen to this. And they shall serve you, and if they will not make peace with you, but shall make war against you, then you shall besiege it, and when the Eternal your God has delivered it into your hands, you shall smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women and the little ones and the cattle and all of the city, even all the spoil thereof, shall you take unto yourself. Now, first of all, we didn't follow instruction number one. Is this a war that is sanctioned by God? Are we fighting in self-defense? The war in Afghanistan was a slam dunk. That one wasn't a problem. But now when we got over there, what did we do? You know, do you come up to the city and say, hey, guys, you want to surrender, or did you want to fight it out with us? Now, you don't do it to the entire nation. You just surround the city and you say, now, listen. Now, you just saw this happen in Fallujah. The Marines come over to Fallujah and they said, okay, we got these insurgents fighting here in the city. So the Marines, if we would have followed God's instruction, we would have circled the city, and we said, okay, guys, inside the city, and we want you to come out peacefully, wave your white flag, and surrender, and everything's going to be hunky-dory. And then when they said no, then you go in there and you kill every one of them. There are no survivors, no prisoners of war. And you're going to say, well, that doesn't fit the Geneva Convention. Well, who said that God was a signer or a participant in the Geneva Convention? Now remember, General Butler said the only reason that we should ever have a war, ever go to war, is when we're defending our Bill of Rights, or when we're attacked, or when we're defending our own homes and our own cities. If we did that, if we just remained neutral, we wouldn't be involved in Iraq to start with. You know, if we'd have minded our own business, we wouldn't be enemies of the Arabs. If we'd have paid those Arabs for their oil to start with, we wouldn't have a problem. Furthermore, why are we buying oil from the Arabs when we have 3.6 billion barrels of oil here in the United States? And you Canadians up there are sitting on another 3 trillion barrels of oil. Did you know that? Did I say billion? I meant to say trillion. Look, you take all the oil reserves in the world, and there's about a trillion barrels. And about 80% of it is sitting over there in the Middle East. Now, that's all the oil reserves in the world, all known oil reserves. Now, there's two other reserves, two others. One of them's called the tar sands up in Alberta, and the other is called the, they got a name for this, over here in the Four Corners area, up around Wyoming and Utah and so on, shale. So it's called oil shale. We have 3.6 trillion barrels. That's three times more than all of the known oil reserves in the world. Costs $30 a barrel to get it out. Costs about $1 to get that oil out of the same Middle East. Now, there was never any reason for us to be over there to start with. The reason that we're there fighting that war is to protect the commercial interests of the major multinational oil companies, which is what Smedley Butler pointed out, that he was down here fighting to make the world safe for the United Fruit Company, making the world safe for J.P. Morgan and Company, making the world safe for the oil companies. The reality of it is that when we go to war, these are commercial wars. They're commercial wars. Now, the corporations that are working around the world taking the cheap oil from the Arabs and screwing them out of their money, which has been going on for the last 100 years, creates a lot of hate and discontent. You know, when you're getting ripped off, people don't like that. You don't like it when somebody's robbing you. Those people over there don't like it when we're robbing them. That's the bottom line. Well, the difference is that we've got the biggest army, we've got the most nukes, we've got the best navy, and we can enforce this militarily upon everybody else. And so they reluctantly say, well, okay, we see the wisdom of your argument, because if we resist, you're going to come over here and raise hell with us. There's been a lot of resistance, but, you know, final analysis, you know, the biggest bully on the block, you know, kind of gets his way. Now, when we went over there to Fallujah, the Marines did a pretty good job over there. I mean, you know, they had them surrounded, and then somebody back here at the political end over here said, no, we got to give up and quit doing that. I don't know. I don't run these wars. I don't direct policy. But I can tell you this, that if Joshua or Moses or God Almighty was running that Fallujah campaign over there, there would have been no survivors. If Joshua was running that show over there, when they got through with Fallujah, they would have walked into the city, and every male that was in there would have been put to the edge of the sword. When we got to Baghdad, we'd have said surrender. And if you give us any lip over here in the process, then we'll kill every male in the city, and then there won't be any soldiers out here to fight us. And that's the way that game has to be played. And if you don't want to play that game that way, then you don't have what it takes to be a world power. You don't have what it takes to stay in the game. And all of these world-ruling empires over time, they decay from within and they collapse. And America's no exception. The British couldn't maintain their world-ruling empire. They didn't have what it took to do that. I want to give you an illustration of how that works. There was a story here that God gave us to learn something from. It comes from Samuel here. This is 1 Samuel chapter 15. So let me flip over here. Write this down if you got a little story, a little time to read this story. It's called 1 Samuel chapter 15. And we had a king by the name of Saul. A goodly young man he was described as being. You know, he stood about 6'6", big, tall Swede brum. No, he was a Benjaminite. He was from Norway. He was a big, tall Norwegian is what he was. That's where those Benjaminites ultimately settled, was there in Norway. And in 1 Samuel chapter 15, Samuel said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken thou unto the voice of the words of the Eternal. Thus says the Eternal of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. And I want to pause right here, and I want to point this out. This is the God of Abraham, the God that my granny said was a bloody God. The Bible's a bloody book. Now listen to this statement here. Here's a group of people over here. I don't know how many there are. There could be 1,000, there could be 100,000, or there could be 5 million of these Amalekites. It doesn't tell us how many there are. But there's a pretty clear instruction in verse 2. It says, thus saith the Eternal of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how that he laid wait for him in the way when he came up out of Egypt. And it's payback time, kids. Payback. And there's a lesson that all of us need to learn here. This God that I'm telling you about here, this isn't sweet Jesus away in the manger here. This isn't Allah, you know, the nice guy. This isn't the kinder, gentler God. This is the God that's meaner than a junkyard dog. You got that? Meaner than a junkyard dog. And he says, I remember what Amalek did. I mean, this guy's got a long memory. A lot of years have gone by. More than 100. 100 years have gone by. In fact, by this time, from the time that Moses led the people out of Egypt until we get down here to Samuel, it's more like about 300 years. 300 years have gone by. That's longer than the United States has been in existence from 1776 to 2006. Think about that. Yeah, this God's got a long memory. It's like an elephant. Verse 3 says, now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have. Spare them not. I want you to slay both man and woman, infant and suckling. Infant. You know what an infant is? An infant is a little baby about 30 inches long, sucking on his mother's breasts. And here's God telling him, I want them all killed. Men, women, children, and babies. Gets worse than that. That's the bad part. And then he wants all of the ox, sheep, camels, and asses killed also. He wants every animal killed. I don't know if he's getting down to every dog and every cat, but you know, when you get down to all the cattle, we're getting down to some. Verse 4, he says, and Saul gathered the people together, and he numbered them 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. Now, this is an army of 210,000. Boys and girls, this is a bigger army than we have in Iraq. We have 160,000 American soldiers in Iraq. And he said, in this verse 4 here, 200,000 soldiers on the ground and 10,000 men of Judah, 210,000, and the same day to the city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. And Saul said unto the Kenites, you go depart and get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For he showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt, so the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until you come to Shur, that is over against Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep and the oxen, and of the fatlings and the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly. Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, It repents me that I have set up Saul to be king, because he has turned back from following me, and has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Eternal all night. And when Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, it was told Samuel, saying that Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set him up at a place that's gone about and passed on down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, Blessed be thou of the Eternal. I have performed the commandment of the Eternal. And Samuel said, Well, what means then this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowering of the cattle or the oxen which I hear? And Saul said, They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Eternal thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. And Samuel said to Saul, Well, stay, and I'll tell you what the Eternal has said to me this night. And he said unto him, Say on. And Samuel said, When you was little in your own sight, was not thou made the head of the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed you king over Israel? And the Eternal said, For sent you on a journey. And he said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Eternal, but you did fly upon the spoil, and didst evil in the sight of the Eternal. He didn't follow all of his instructions. He couldn't follow all of this law. We Americans couldn't follow all of this law. And so as a result of that, you get bad results. You get bad results. Now, we Americans like to pray a lot. And I noticed that when the soldiers, you know, over in Iraq on the news, you know, they'll bow their heads and they'll be praying. I don't know who they're praying to. I don't know what God the soldiers of America worship and serve, but it's not this God. This is a different guy. Because if you worshiped and you served the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, then it would seem like to me you'd follow his instructions and that you'd carry out these wars in the way that you were instructed to carry them out. Now, there's a lesson to be learned here. Follow instructions and do what you're told. Sit down, shut up, fold your hands, do what you're told. Now, my daddy instructed me when I was a little boy. And he explained to me, he said, you know, life can be good or life can be kind of poor. He said, if you can learn to sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told, life goes along a lot smoother. He said, if you want to get uppity and you can't follow instructions, can't do what you're told, you can't sit still, he said, then you're going to get whipped a lot. You're going to have to suffer a lot of pain, suffering, and anguish. I tested him. He was right. Well, Dad was right again. And so at an early age, I learned how to sit down, shut up, fold my hands, and do what I was told. Life's been downhill ever since for me. But I'm just a reporter now, and I look at this war going on over in Iraq, and I'm saying, hey, I don't think you guys have learned how to sit down, shut up, and follow instructions here. So I didn't care much for this war idea when it was presented. And there's some other statutes in here that I think that we ought to look at when we're talking about war, and can we follow instructions. Now, this is an example. War is short and brutal. It's not a long, drawn-out affair so that Lockheed Martin, Halliburton, and Kellogg Brown and Root can mine the American public for billions of dollars in profit. These wars are short, to the point, they're brutal, they're punishing, and that's the purpose for them. So when Smedley Butler said, you know, I think that we ought to have a little program over here that before we go to war, that everybody that participates in the war gets paid the same amount of money. The board chairman at Boeing and Lockheed Martin get the same wages as the foot soldier in Fallujah. Wild new concept. I said, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. And then when you get over to Fallujah and you want to send a message to your enemies over here, and you kill every male, you put every male in the city to the sword. You know, everybody that makes war with you. Now, I notice here that the Americans are having a problem determining who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. Boys and girls in an insurgency, all of the boys are bad guys. All of them. How do I know that? Because we had a statute right here in the scripture. It's in Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20. Tells you how to solve that problem. Tells you how to solve that problem. And if you went into that town, you said, hey, kids, you know, we don't want to have any more of this insurgency thing going on here. You guys want to make war with us or not? And if they say, yeah, we want to make war with you, okay, out of your own mouth, boys, you condemned yourselves. And you go through that town, and you kill every male in that town. Every one of them. Oh, I know that that's genocide. I'm not denying that, but then I'm just a reporter. I didn't sit here and say, well, this is the policy, you know, that we ought to follow. I'm suggesting that you people reconsider. You want to be a world ruling empire? Then you got to act like one. You've got to be just as ruthless. You've got to be just as obedient as your God demands if you want to be a world ruling empire. Now, if you don't, you know, which is where you're on your way to. You're on your way to oblivion like the Roman Empire and the Egyptians and Babylonians and the Greeks and everybody else. Now, Alexander the Great was a great, great general. He went out and he conquered the world. Couldn't hang on to it. He couldn't get out of Flo's place. Ended up getting VD. Well, let's see here. I've got to give you a reminder here before we continue on. So let me give you this mid-course reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Remember that the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed at all times, of course, by the Law Hour and editorial review. But the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you want more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right. There was a story in here about the Amalekites here. That was number 7. But that story had its beginning. Remember, Saul now was instructed to go down there and kill all the Amalekites. He wanted them all dead. God wanted them all dead. The story actually gets started over here in Exodus chapter 17. Exodus 17, verse 8. And it came to pass, then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go out, fight with Amalek tomorrow. And I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. And Joshua did as Moses said to him, and fought with Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. It came to pass, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone, and they put it under him, and Moses sat thereon, and Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side, and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Eternal said unto Moses, you write this for a memorial in a book, and you rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. For I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar, and he called the name of it Jehovah-Nissi. And he said, because the Eternal has sworn that the Eternal will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Now here's the God of Abraham. He said, now I'm going to have war with this guy Amalek, these Amalekites, from generation to generation. Then he finally comes to the first king, Saul, and he says, all right, Saul, now this is payback time. And here's your marching orders, here's your instructions. And as we saw here just before the break, Saul couldn't follow his instructions. Now, I'm not sure that George Bush got any instructions from the God of Abraham concerning Saddam Hussein. Now, maybe he did, and I don't know about it. I can't sit here and tell you what George Bush and God have in common. George didn't make mention of the fact that he was given these instructions, although George keeps telling us, you know, President Bush, he keeps telling us he's got a pretty close communication with God. I kind of wonder, well, which God is it? Is it Satan, or is it the God of Moses? Now, George Bush is a member of Skull and Bones. Remember in the last election? George Bush is a Skull and Bones man. His daddy was a Skull and Bones man. And his granddaddy was a Skull and Bones man. And Skull and Bones is the think tank in the United States that directs all of our policies here. All of them come out of Skull and Bones. Now, John Kerry is also a Skull and Bones man. Skull and Bones is a group of practicing witches and warlocks. Those people practice satanic witchcraft. I don't think that George Bush, your president that you elected here to lead you, is of the same stripe as Moses and Joshua. I think he's from a different camp. I just thought I'd share that with you so that you'd know. Now, the war that you're involved in over here isn't authorized by the God of Abraham, and you're not doing very well over here, and I'd go ahead and make a prediction here that I don't think that war's going to come out very well. And the reason I don't think it's going to come out for you very well is because you don't seem to be following the instructions here that I see in the Scripture that require that you follow in order to get a successful conclusion. There's more, though, to the story. Now, war is a racket, and it's a racket because it makes profit, and the making of profits is strictly prohibited here in the war statutes. And there's a story in Judges, chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, that deals with treaties and making agreements. You know, and so we're over there in Iraq making treaties with these people and agreements. Now, just want to point out that that's against the law to do that. And we went over there, and we're signing these deals and one thing and another, and it sounds good. You know, people like to make deals, and they like to have treaties, and we've got the NATO treaty and the Southeast Asia treaty, and I mean, just you can go on and on and on about all these treaties that we're involved in. I don't know how many, but there's a bunch of them, and they're strictly prohibited. And over here in Judges chapter 2, the angel of the Eternal came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and I brought you into the land which I swore unto your fathers, and I said, I'll never break my covenant with you. Covenant, that's a contract. He says, I won't break my contract with you, and you shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. You shall throw down their altars, but you've not obeyed my voice. Now, why have you done this? And wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare unto you. Is this insurgency over here a thorn in our sides in Iraq? Hey, they look like a thorn in the sides of the Americans to me. Now, what was this deal? You know, we sent this ambassador Bremer over here to Iraq. Remember that guy? And he went over there and he signed a deal over there with the Iraqis and is helping them set up a government over there, and we're gonna spread democracy over there and one thing and another. Did you people think that the God of Abraham was a Democrat? I don't know. It looks like to me that Americans are smitten with this concept of democracy and this voting thing over here, you know. And I just thought I'd point this out. Did you know that the God of the Bible is pictured as a King of Kings and a Lord of Lords? He says the heavens are his habitation and the earth is his footstool. That's the way he describes it, you know. And there's a story here in Numbers chapter 16, I believe it is, that deals with this thing of voting, this thing of a divided government. I just thought I'd share with you, this guy is a benevolent dictator. He's kind of like your daddy. Do you remember your daddy when you were living at home? He was a benevolent dictator. My dad described it to me in a monarchical form. He said, I'm King Edward, and your mother is Queen Mildred. And you're the subject, little Georgie. I make the laws. And your mother executes the laws, and you sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. That's the way he explained family life to me. Now, we didn't have in our family, I'm just speaking now for the Gordon family, we didn't have a Bill of Rights. We didn't have any Fourth Amendment protections against searches and seizures. Not in the Gordon household. Not that I ever saw. That was a concept that I learned in high school. That was something that somebody taught me about civil rights and things like that when you're emancipated and you leave home. But I was raised in a kingdom, in a monarchy, in which my dad was the king. And when he said something, that was the last word on the subject. And so my dad, you know, he would say, this is the law. This is the way this game has to be played. And a couple of times I got a little uppity with him, and I said, I ain't playing that game that way. And he bounced me off the ball and beat the living hell out of me, straightened me out, and then, you know, things got back to normal again. And I guess that's the way we Americans are going to get the hell beaten out of us over here until we can get our heads screwed on straight and learn how this game has to be played. We think in terms of democracy. We think in terms of we're going to vote. We think in terms of the majority rules. And I think we're going to be in for a very rude awakening here pretty shortly. Now we're getting some awakening over here with this Iraq and Afghan problem, and we're getting some awakening over here with our economy. I hope that we're getting some awakening with our paper money and our Federal Reserve and our income tax. I mean, we've decided for ourselves that this is the way we want government to work, and it's not working nearly as well as we thought it was going to. Now, we would like our God to go out and fight for us. I noticed that the Muslims are sitting over there saying, you know, they call upon their God, Allah, and they say, Allah, help us defeat these Americans over here. Boys and girls, let me tell you that Allah over there isn't going to help those guys win or lose. But our God, the God of Abraham, is going to make sure that we lose. I don't think he's fighting for the Muslims. I think he's fighting against us. This election that just came down was described as it wasn't a vote for the Democrats as much as it was a vote against the Republicans. And I see that pretty much as what's going on over here in Iraq. God isn't working for Allah near as much as he's working against us. And I'm pointing out to you that we're not following instructions. Now, I'm just hitting the tip of the iceberg here. There's probably 50 or 75 statutes that deal with war. A lot of examples in Scripture that deal with this thing of war and this thing of making treaties and agreements, you know. And we entered into a coalition. We entered into an agreement with a bunch of other people to go over there and go to war, you know. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. These agreements that we're making to create this alliance over here, that's a violation of the law to start with. There are four statutes that deal with this thing of making these contracts or covenants or treaties with these foreign and alien entities like Great Britain and Poland. And Japan had a bunch of countries ship their troops over there, you know. They called it the Allies or the Alliance. What the hell is that all about? What are all of these alliances about? You know, you're talking about this democracy that we want to set up over here in Iraq. I'm not so sure, but what these people over here had a pretty good government. Now, think about it now for a second. You go over and you poll these Iraqis and you say, well, what do you think of the Americans? And they say 80% of the people over there, now I assume this is our government over here conducting these polls, 80% of the Iraqis want us to get the hell out. Leave them alone. 80%. Sounds like a landslide to me. Now, if 80% of them over there want us out of there, then evidently they're not nearly as enamored with this democracy thing as we'd like to think that they are. Has it ever occurred to us that maybe this democracy thing over there isn't what they want? And then maybe that's something that we're kind of forcing down their throats, whether they like it or not. It's George Bush that wants democracy over there. I don't think that the mullahs over there or the Muslims themselves want democracy. I mean, they don't see any great widespread clamor, you know, for democracy over there among the people that are involved. At least that's not what I'm seeing. And Smedley Butler pointed out, he says, why do we want to go over there and mess around with those people? Why do we seem to think that these people need democracy or that they need a monarchy or that they need a dictator or somebody else? Now, our president told us that we needed to go over there and give them a democracy. I disagree with our president, you know, with all due respect, of course, sir, but I don't think I need to go over there and explain to those people how they ought to live their lives or how they ought to rule themselves. And then somebody says, well, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. Well, my God, so is Kim Il-Jung and so is Fidel Castro. They're both bad guys, too. But, you know, are we supposed to go down to Cuba now and straighten out their government and give them what we think that they ought to have? You know, those people fought a revolution back in 1959. Back in the 1950s, they wanted Fidel Castro to be their leader. And so they fought and they created this this new government down there. They threw the old Batista regime out, and now they've got Fidel Castro. Now am I to believe that Fidel Castro is bad for them? And we ought to go down there and fix that? Or am I to believe that maybe Fidel Castro was bad for the Sands and the mob and the Holiday Inn and Ramada Inn and maybe for American business and multinational corporations, and we need to go down there and make the business climate better for American business? Now, is that the way that's supposed to work? That's the way Smedley Butler pointed it out. He said that's what he was down in Haiti, Dominican Republic, Nicaragua, and over in France doing, making the world safe for the multinational corporations of America. Is that what you want your sons and daughters to live and die for? The multinationals and the boardroom culture. I mean, you know, if that's what you want, get after it. Don't let me get in the way. All right, so let me circle that one off over here. And we got this 1 Samuel chapter 8. We got a little uppity with our God one time. And we gave him the finger and kicked him out. And we're the only people in the world who've ever done that. You know, the Muslims, they don't kick all out. The Buddhists, you don't see them giving Buddha the finger and telling him get out of their lives. But we Americans, we Anglo-Saxons, we've been doing this for 3,000 years. It's nothing new. And it starts off here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. It came to pass when Samuel was old and he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel and the name of his second Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba and his sons walked not in his ways, but they turned aside after lucre and they took bribes and perverted judgment. Now that sounds like Jack Abramoff and the Republicans in Congress, doesn't it? They were taking bribes. They were bad government officials. The people took a look at that graft and corruption and said, well, listen, these are God servants over here. This God over here, he can't keep control over his over his own public servants over here, and we want a change in government. We're going to vote these guys out. Now, God, remember, is a king. He's a monarch, and I'm sure that he was pretty well aware of the fact that these guys were taking bribes. More than likely, he was pretty aware of that. And I kind of figured that at some point in time, he probably would have made a change in administration there at some point. It's kind of like old FDR, you know, when it came time, God made a change in administration there with Franklin Roosevelt, and he died, and Harry Truman took over. No, Harry, remember, he retired, and then Dwight Eisenhower took over. Well, anyway, he goes on here, and he tells a little more of the story over here. And all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together. They came to Samuel at Ramah, and they said to him, behold, you're old, and your sons don't walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. And they wanted a king like all the nations around them. Now the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us, and Samuel prayed unto the Eternal. And the Eternal said to Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto you, because they haven't rejected you, Samuel. They've rejected me, that I should not reign over them. We rejected our God, and we said, we're not going to have you to rule over us. Okay. Okay, no problem. This God is a pretty easy guy to get along with. And he said, okay, if you don't want me messing with you, I'll butt out. So our God butted out, and we've been kind of on our own ever since. He goes on a little further over here in verse 17. He says, now he'll take the tenth of your sheep, and you'll be a servant. And you'll cry out to me in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you. And the Eternal will not hear you in that day. So I see these people over here praying now. I'm praying mightily, you know, about this George Bush and the Republican Congress. Did you get that message right there? They said, you'll cry out to me in that day. You'll be praying to Jesus. Oh, Jesus! Now, how does this go? It says, oh, Jesus, won't you help us today? And people get real religious, you know. And they want Jesus. They want God now to come in here and fix their hurts. Kind of like a kid riding his bicycle, you know. He falls off of it, and he wants Granny to kiss all of his hurts. And our God said, well, I'm not going to listen to that crap. You know, you give me the finger, you know, I can take the message. So that's where we're at today in Iraq. You can cry out to Jesus as long as you want, but he told you you're not listening to it, so, you know, keep on praying. Keep after it. Now, as for me and my house, we're not going to waste our time praying to Jesus about Iraq, because he already told us, you know, you made your bed, sweetheart. Now go sleep in it. Now our God said to Samuel, he said, now therefore you hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. So Samuel goes over, he says, listen, this king is going to create this military-industrial complex over here, and you're going to be the servants of this. Listen to this. He says in verse 11, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He's going to take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. He's going to appoint him captains over thousands, captains over fifties. He'll set them to ear his ground, reap his harvest, and make his instruments of war and the instruments of his chariots. Now, doesn't that sound like Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root with no bid contracts? Huh? Hey, kids, this isn't a very good program over here, in my view. And then, of course, you got to pay the taxes that support this, and the Social Security and income tax take one-third of everything you people create and produce right off the top so that we can spend it over there in Iraq. On what? On what? What are you buying when you get it? You're spending $100 billion a year over there in Iraq. I would assume that we're going to steal their oil. Well, how's that going to benefit you and me? Now, remember, Butler pointed out, we used to have what we called the Admiralty Prize System. That is, when we went to war, we got paid. That Admiralty Prize System comes from the war statutes in the Bible. Did you know that? I'll show you that next time. Yeah, that's right. We divide up the spoil. When we go to war and we risk our lives and our limbs, we get paid. Now, if the American soldiers were getting paid that $2.5 trillion worth of oil over there, we're going to divide that up among the soldiers over there. That war makes a lot of sense. But soldiers, I don't think you're going to get a cut out of that $2.5 trillion worth of oil. I thought that was all earmarked for Exxon and Shell Oil and the rest of these big multinational oil companies. I'm not really sure I want to go over there and fight and die and bleed and risk my life and not get paid more than a medal, don't you? All right, we're about out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, until then. Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.